Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Today, free cash flow project analysis. This is the last actual lecture with new content of the semester, and from here it is all downhill to the end of the course or something like that. Now, I have uploaded a set of practice problems for the quiz 8, which is on Monday. It's like a miniature version of the final exam. You'll see just about every Excel type of problem and some other ones on that quiz. And that practice problem sheet just gives you all of the quantitative scope that you will face on quiz 8, and then, of course, again on the final exam. Monday, I'll do just a little bit of light review, then we will do quiz 8, and then on Wednesday, it's review day. You'll do the student course evaluations, and then the rest of it is just reviewing for the final exam. Now, I expect you to write down everything I say. That's your study guide, is what you write down that I tell you that is important for you to focus on. And trying to think, what else? Am I forgetting something? And then now next week, your exam is on Monday at 10 o'clock. Finals week, yeah. Finals week, yours is on Monday. So I will be in my office on Monday morning at about 7:15 in the morning, and I will be there until the exam at 10 o'clock. So if you have any last minute questions, then by all means, get to my office hours on Monday before the final exam. That's why I'm there, is for you to ask questions. Moving on, we have a couple of spreadsheets I have for you to look at today. But first, a look at the numbers here. And as you can see, in the east side of the planet, the other side of the world, it wasn't a particularly spectacular day. The Hang Seng was down. The Nikkei actually squeezed out a little bit of a rise, but there was not a lot of activity, and that was true across the world. If you look at Europe, everything was down, except the FTSE ended up down too. It wasn't really a dramatic down day, but it was broad enough that you could see that that whole side of the world, Europe, Asia, were not in a good mood today. Now, our markets were more robust. The Dow had been up a little more, but it's begun to slide here in the last hour or so. Well, actually, it's been sliding from its high since the morning. But right now it's up about less than 0.5%. And the S&P 500 is actually doing fairly well, up 0.75%. And the NASDAQ is, of course, up really strongly today. The thing, though, is that if we come over here and look at the commodities, crude oil has jumped again because of the general sentiment that there is not, the ceasefire has ended, and there have been reports of a couple of attacks on tankers trying to go through the Strait of Hormuz. So we've got gasoline prices jumping again, which is not what we want to see, but here we are. And so gasoline prices, which had begun to fall, will probably start to rise again, kind of a volatile situation. Now, if you look at the 10-year Treasury bond, it is moving back toward 4.3%. It had been settling back down, which would have been good for the economy. But if it's rising again, that's not good news for the economy, notwithstanding what the traders on Wall Street are thinking right now. But look here, it's kind of interesting because even though it looks like there was a bullish day by those numbers, if you look at a sector map, really, technology and energy were the only things that were really up. And they were up, but that's sort of like they're so, the technology sector is so big that it can kind of make a disproportionate appearance of a bullish day. When in fact, if you look at the sector map, it wasn't a bullish day at all. It was almost more of a bear day if you look across sectors of the economy. So that's something that you to always remember. Look at the sector map to see what visually what the numbers sometimes are masking with these ginormous companies out there that are sort of like dominating the news, dominating the indexes. They can give you a an incorrect picture of what's going on. I want to show you the company that I will be working with today, just so you can have a look at, is the Hershey Company. Well, that didn't work. Hershey, the Hershey Company. HSY, I'll just do the trading symbol. HSY, the Hershey Company. So we can just see a little background, the context of what we're talking about here. And you see it's been down. It's down a little bit today, sort of reflecting more of the general economic economy. And you see it's got a very, very low beta. And there's a kind of a simple, easy reason for that. Hershey is chocolate. And chocolate is such an embedded part of Western culture that it doesn't move with the markets nearly as much as other companies would. It's just such a fundamental, for lack of a better term, necessity of life. And so its beta is going to be low. If you look at its PE ratio, though, that's actually a little bit overvalued right now. But they do pay a nice dividend. They're profitable every year. There's no way that the company is going to die. It's very old, stable, conservative management and all that. I want you to look at the 5-year here. Now the 5-year, now this company has these odd little waves in it, these kind of ups and then downs. But overall, you can see that there is sort of a tendency to come back to something that we might describe more like something like intrinsic value. And you see it right here that it wants to keep coming back to someplace around 180, 90 a share. That's a characteristic of old companies that they tend to doesn't take them all that long to rediscover or realign themselves in their stock to the more or less the underlying intrinsic value that is the company's true worth. And you see it here in this sort of wavy chart over time. It just kind of keeps wanting to come back to this place that it, over and over again. Even when it spikes, it comes back down to it. And you see that 2 times in the last 5 years. And that's sort of the underlying meaning of intrinsic value. Over a long period of time, a stock can be overvalued or undervalued, but it eventually keeps finding its way back to a true value. And you're seeing it here. Without further ado, let me take you on a couple of journeys here. The first one is to pull up the financials of the Hershey Company. And when I do that, let me take it over here. I have brought it down for you. And if you go to your files, spreadsheets, class spreadsheets, go down here to the Hershey Company. Oh, you have it up? Okay. And here it is. Now, before I go any further, these spreadsheets, income statement, balance sheet, statement of cash flows, ratios, key statistics, I drew those from a single source. Now, I put in this free cash flow myself so we could do that calculation. However, to get financial statements from a company, it always for a long, long time, you go to SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. It has a site called, it has a facility called EDGAR. And there you could download all of the financial statements of any public corporation. Last year, without any notice to the finance professionals, they stopped providing this service. That whole idea of transparency is no longer part of the SEC as it is in the current political environment. So these companies are not required to put their financials in Excel format and upload them for viewing by the public. However, we can still get them. They are behind a paywall, and as a student here at ISU, you have access to Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage. It's a paywall site, but all you have to do, and I will put this up here so you can see it for yourselves. The site is at https://guides.libraryy.illinoisstate.edu/BUS100/SP Global. No spaces. Let me do something here real quick. There's the website. And this is, again, a paywall site. You can't get to it without credentials. And a subscription to this service is extraordinarily expensive. And it is considered the go-to place for any kind of professional, business professionals in finance, accounting, operations, even in marketing, because it has just oceans of data on any public company. So if I go there, now this takes you, whoops, really? I did it, didn't I? Yes, I did. So let's try it again. Okay, if you go to that web, URL, that web address, you'll come to this place, which is our portal to S&P Global Net Advantage. You click on this link, and it will take you through, credential you, and then you will be taken over to Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage. Now, when you first look at this, it doesn't look like it's very impressive. This is sort of like a big line of trees before you open up to an ocean. Now, in this case, I will just go up this little sort of innocent-looking box, and you type in HSY, a trading symbol of Hershey, and here's where the fun begins. Now, over here on this left sidebar is just tons of different pages of information. Anything you would want, from financial statements to the history of the company, the biographies of the board of directors, compensation of the executives, anything you want is here. And this is an authoritative site. So you can use this in your any term paper, just cite to the Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage. This is legitimate. Now over here, let me take you to the income statement. Now for your purposes, now I have my own preferences. for example, I prefer to have the latest column of financial information on the on the left. So I do that. Now, if you click view all, try that again. More options, I'm sorry. More options. It defaults to one decimal place, and I prefer to have two. Some like to have four decimal places, but my preference is this. Once you have sort of shaped those financial statements, now you're saying, well, wait, isn't that just the income statement? Well, up here, if you click on download financials, it will give you everything, all the financials. And it's an Excel format. And what you'll see is this. Now, I put in the free cash flow myself so we can do that calculation. But you'll get key statistics on the company, and then income statement, balance sheet, statement of cash flows. It even does the ratios for you. And it just goes crazy with ratios. That's one of the big reasons I don't have you calculate ratios anymore. I want you to know what they mean and interpret them. But as far as calculating them, this is authoritative. Everything you could imagine, quick ratio, current ratio, cash ratio, return on assets, return on equity, anything you want, it's right there. And it gives you the historical, so you can see trends and ratios without killing yourself trying to do all those calculations or make Excel sheets yourself. It's right here for you, all of it. So that's kind of nice. But we'll be focusing on the income statement, balance sheet, and statement of cash flows for the purposes of this lecture here. The upshot, the bottom line of this is that if you're going to look for data, this is authoritative. Now, an implication of this is that we are in an era where far too many educated people, and certainly uneducated, are using artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence networks cannot go behind paywalls. They can't see them. They don't have the credentials. They go to open sources that aren't vetted, they are not verified, guaranteed. That's where they get their data. That's why you get AIs giving completely ridiculous data sets. They're inventing it. They're inventing data. They're inventing citations to journals because they can't get behind paywalls to the real stuff. So they just make up the data as they go along. If they can't find any place where the data is, they'll just make it up. And if they do find data that is more or less legit, it's not at a site where there is an editorial review, cross-checking, referees that look through the data or the articles. They don't get to those. That's why you cannot trust artificial intelligence systems in those kinds of situations. Now, I'm speaking here and our graduate teaching associate, we are both certified in artificial intelligence by the god of it, IBM. And so when we tell you these kinds of things, we're not blowing smoke up your butts. Don't trust data that an AI, don't tell it to go out there and find data, because it'll just do what we call hallucinate. It'll just make it up. And if it doesn't, if it finds data, it doesn't care that it wasn't actually reviewed by someone for accuracy. That's not how AIs work. Okay, anyway, now that I've bitched about that, here's something I need you to write down. This is the authoritative formula for finding free cash flow. And I wrote one on the board, but I want you to make sure that this is the one that you use. Free cash flow is revenue minus operating costs minus depreciation expense, DEPEX. And you take that and you multiply it all by 1 minus T. That is NOPAT, net operating profit after taxes. That's NOPAT. And then you recover the DEPEX because it wasn't a real expense, plus EPX. And then you subtract CapEx, capital expenditures, and then you subtract the change in net operating working capital. In other words, did your short-term assets and liabilities absorb cash or did they release cash? Now, net operating working capital is your current assets minus your current liabilities. Technically operating assets and operating liabilities. The change in net operating working capital is the current year net operating working capital, NOWC sub zero, minus the previous year's net operating working capital, NOWC sub negative one. In other words, we're looking at whether cash was absorbed from last year to this year, or was cash released from this year to from last year to this year. Now here comes the tedious part, actually finding a free cash flow. We're going to do it for Hershey for the current year. The first thing we'll do is we're going to write what we need in the far left column A. I will write down, okay, I'm going to need revenue. I am going to need operating costs. And I will need depreciation expense, DEPEX. And then I'll need the tax rate, which I'm just going to put that down, 21%, just to get it in there. Okay, the next thing we're going to need is to recover the DEPEX, so we'll put it again. We'll pull down CapEx. Now again, I caution that in the financial statements, that will be a negative number. So we're going to need to take its absolute value when we pull it into this sheet. And then we have to deal with net operating working capital. So what we're going to need are the current assets for the current year. And the current liabilities for the current year. And from those, we can find the net operating working capital for the current year. We'll run back through and get the current assets for the last year and the current liabilities for the last year. And from those two, we can get the net operating working capital for last year. And then from current net operating working capital for the current year and net operating working capital for the previous year, we can get the change in net operating working capital. And finally, once we've loaded those in, we can calculate free cash flow. I'll let you catch up with me here for a minute. Okay. We've done all of this. So now it's time to go back and retrieve the numbers. The revenue, that would be on the income statement. So we'll say equals, go to the income statement and get our total revenue, which is line B11. We've got that. Now we're going to get the operating costs, and this one we'll have to probably add a few numbers together. Equals, okay, there is the cost of goods sold. Then we'll have to add SG&A, and then we'll add R&D expenses, which are minimal. And we get that. Now here's the interesting one. If we go over to get depreciation expense on the income statement, it's not reported there. You see it? It's not reported. That means that we're going to need to go over to the statement of cash flows to get it. There it is over there, right up at the top. And we'll use depreciation and amortization total. But first of all, let me get back here. Equals, go over to statement of cash flows, depreciation and amortization total. And it's 503.7, is that? Yeah. So now, the next thing is we're going to have to get that DEPEX again, and I'll just equals where I got it up here. So now we need to get the current assets and the current liabilities. For this year, the current assets, whoops, I need to get CapEx, I'm sorry. CapEx equals. Now remember that we have to do absolute value because it's going to be reported as a negative. So we've got ABS, open parenthesis. Now we go over to the cash flows, statement of cash flows. Now we have to look kind of prowl here, but there it is. Capital expenditures. And then we can, there you go. Now we'll get the current assets and current liabilities. For this year, we go to balance sheet for current assets, and we get, what, about $3.588 billion? For current liabilities for this year, go to the balance sheet, prowl around a little bit. It's clear down here at B39, we got that. So net operating working capital for the current year is current assets minus current liabilities, zero. There you go. Now we go back and do the same thing for last year. For current assets last year equals, go to the balance sheet, and we find current assets, there they are, at C18. Current liabilities for last year are at C39. So the net operating working capital last year was its current equals current assets last year minus current liabilities last year. So now the change Whoops, let me scoot that in a little bit there. Change is this year's net operating working capital. Which was 577 minus last year's, which was negative 170 something. So in this case, their net working capital, net operating working capital, absorbed cash because it went up. Well, here we are. We're ready to do free cash flow now. Follow that formula right over there. Equals, open parenthesis, revenue minus operating costs minus DEPEX, close the parenthesis, times 1 minus the tax rate, close the parenthesis. Now we add DEPEX back at the next line. We subtract CAPEX. And we subtract the change in net operating working capital, clear down here. Let me do that again, just to make sure I did everything right. Open parenthesis. Revenue minus operating costs minus DEPEX. Close the parenthesis. Times 1 minus the tax rate. Close the parentheses. Add back DEPEX. Subtract CAPEX. And subtract net operating working capital. Yeah, I screwed up. So this is a company that has positive free cash flow. It has 86 million, is that? Probably 66 million. It's okay. It can pay its interest expense. It can pay some dividends. And it even has some left over that it can put some of the money into its capital expenditures. The rest would come from borrowing and selling stock. This is a healthy old company. Does this every year. And this is what we want to see. Like I said on Monday, the question is, what are these companies doing that have negative free cash flow? Where are they getting that money? This is the end. This is how much they have at the end. It's not accounting. It's the actual physical money in the bank. It's not a phony thing called retained earnings. This is the actual money. And if that's negative, they've got a problem. They can't pay something. But if they have a positive, then they're okay. They can pay their bills. They can pay a dividend if they want to. They can plow some money back into the company and capital expenditures, whatever, hire more people. This is an old, healthy company. This is what you want to see. These young companies, they can have negative free cash flow for a few years, but they have to find a way to start paying their own way. And when they have those negatives, the question, again, is no longer financial. It's forensic. Where is that money coming from? Because they don't have, if it's negative, there's no money to pay those things that have to be paid. In this case, yeah, Hershey, it's making money. At the very last line, the one where you actually write checks, that's what that free cash flow does for us. It's not profit. As you can see, it's definitely a different approach. We're looking at operating revenues, operating costs, and all of that. Okay, that's actually what this is all about, is kind of the culmination of finance is to, in at least corporate finance, is to ask a question. Can the company write the checks to pay its bills? because the lights don't stay on if they can't do that. Okay, now the next thing that I want to do here is I want to go to the other spreadsheet that I have for you. It's called free cash flow, and it's a doozy. I'm going to save this, and I'm going to upload it with these numbers in it back up to Canvas, your Canvas files folder. Canvas, files, spreadsheets, class spreadsheets, and this the Hershey Company will be in there with these numbers in there for you. And so let me do this. File, let's save it, and I'll take care of that after class. I'll upload it immediately for you to use. This is the 800-pound moose. It is actually better organized than the weighted average cost of capital because it doesn't have, it looks like it has a lot of moving parts, but they're all pretty straightforward. Let me explain. This is following the book and what they talk about. In the book, there is a little something unusual that you wouldn't see, and I've made this one so it follows how the book does it, but you could modify it. Now, typically, when you make capital expenditures, you capitalize them. In other words, you depreciate a part of that expenditure every year for a period of years as specified in general accepted accounting principles. But the way the book does it, to simplify it, it says there's a depreciation bonus. And we're going to say that they are allowed to depreciate the entire capital expenditure in the year zero. You buy the equipment and then you depreciate it all away right away. Now, realistically, you would be depreciating it straight line, some accelerated cost recovery or double declining balance, something like that. But for the purposes of the book, they say depreciate it all in year zero right here. So we put 100% there. And that simplifies the rest of it. Now, all you need to do really in a sheet like this is to tell it how many units are selling and then how much per unit. And then that will tell you your revenue for the first year. And we have a zero growth rate of revenue. So it'll just be flat across the years. Now remember, year zero is the year of investments. Buying the equipment, buying the initial inventory, and all of that. Now, this is fairly typical to say that your variable costs, which are cost of goods sold and SG&A, are a percent of revenue. That's very normal to do that. In this case, we're saying there's your cost of goods sold, your wholesale cost is 40% of the revenue. And your selling, general, and administrative are 20% of your revenues. Now, the increase in inventory. At the beginning, before the first year, you buy the inventory. And then every year, you sell that inventory and you buy it back again until the very last year, which is when you recover. You sell your inventory, but you don't buy it back. So in that last year, whatever you bought, you get to sell off and you don't have to buy it back. So you recover that inventory cost. Now your initial capital expenditure here is $900,000 CapEx. And like I said, following the book's method, it's 100% depreciation. You depreciate it all the way in year zero. Now this one is new. It's called spontaneous financing. And I actually teach a lot about this in my short-term cash management class. Companies can finance some of their capital investments and short-term expenditures by slowing down paying their bills. And it's called spontaneous financing. Like, for example, if I took you, sir, I pay you $100 a week. that's $100 out of my pocket typically. But I decide I'm going to just pay you $80 of it this week. And of course, after you try to beat the crap out of me, what I've done is I've actually spontaneously created $20 that I can use for other things. That is actually a well-known trick. And there are some companies that are masters of it. They can slow down paying bills to the point where their suppliers are financing all of their frickin' current assets. Their suppliers are their financers by keeping their payments slow. The icon of this, the guru of this, is Walmart. It's called a cash conversion cycle, and it's supposed to be positive, but theirs is actually negative, which means that they're spontaneously financing all of their current operations by not paying their suppliers fast, quickly. It's amazing. They are masters of it. There was one of my groups in an upper level course was doing an analysis of Costco, and they haven't gotten quite to negative cash conversion cycle, but they are definitely using a lot of this spontaneous financing, just slowing down paying what they owe suppliers, and then using that freed up money to finance their operations, their short-term operations. So that's what that spontaneous financing is all about. And the book says, well, they slowed down their accounts payable. In other words, it's spontaneous financing. Now, your tax rate here is 21%. Now, the salvage value. Let me mention something, salvage value. And the book brings this up that I would be remiss not to talk about. There is salvage value, and then there is net salvage value. Now, this really didn't mean anything to me on a professional and on a business level until a couple of years ago. You are taxed on the difference between your salvage value and your book value. So in other words, if I were to, let's say, sell a piece of equipment for $5,000, but there was still, it hadn't been fully depreciated away, and there was still on the books a net value of $1,000. So in other words, $4,000 is taxable salvage value. So the net salvage value is going to be your salvage value minus your book value times 1 minus your tax rate. I didn't know this until I actually sold a piece of equipment. And those were kind of close to it. And I ended up paying tax on $4,000. So, there you go. Anyway, let's take this down and just show you the numbers. And again, you don't really need to know all of these internal moving parts, but you can see, obviously, your revenue is $175,000 here. You don't touch that. But then the cost of goods sold is 40% of that, which comes out to be $70,000. So your gross profit, gross income is $105,000. And then the SG&A is 20% of the revenue, and that's that number there. And then your operating income is then your gross income minus your operating costs. And then you take your taxes out, and you get your NOPAT, net operating profit after taxes. Okay, now here in year zero, notice that your CapEx is $900,000, but you get to depreciate out all 900,000 immediately. There's not a depreciation line here year by year. You're just getting it all depreciated off right out of the gate. And then the spontaneous financing adds some money to your pockets as you start the operations. And then your change in net operating working capital. You bought $100,000 worth of inventory, so inventory went up by $100,000. And so your free cash flow the first year comes out to be a negative $269,000. And then you go through and you do the same, that right there, year over year over year, and you get your free cash flows. And then you do the net present value and the internal rate of return and the profitability index. As you can see, I'm using a discount rate of 8.5%. Now for internal rate of return, I've got a hurdle rate of 10%. In other words, we don't accept a project if the internal rate of return is below a 10%. Well, if I run the numbers, the NPV, the present net present value of the future expected cash flows, is $26,870.81, so we accept. The internal rate of return comes out to be 12%, and that's above our hurdle rate, so we accept using the IRR method. And the profitability index is just derived from the NPV, so it's an accept. So you don't even have to say positive or negative. I made this sheet so that it does that for you. Notice something. Suppose that we said the discount rate, that's awfully low. Let's take a discount rate of 15%. Oh, look at that. It is rejected on the NPV standard, but it's still accepted on the IRR standard. That can happen. So but this gives you sort of a sensitivity analysis. 15%, we tried 8.5% to begin with, and we see that it is accepted at NPV. Now let me try 12%, see what happens. Still okay at 12%. 13, it goes down. It's rejected. This is more or less sensitivity analysis. And so in this case, we can actually try different discount rates to see how, in a worst case scenario, the discount rate is 13%. Well, in that case, we reject it if we're NPV users. Now let me try something else up here. What if we decide, okay, the price point of $3.50, what if we tried a price point of $4? Oh, we accept it there. This allows you to do another dimension of sensitivity analysis. How sensitive is accept or reject based upon the price of the product, what we go out selling it at? And you can also do this with cost of goods sold. Well, what if we put it at 50% or 30%? With SG&A, you can do the same thing. Again, the basis of sensitivity analysis, create a spreadsheet so that you can change numbers and see where your limits are on the project. In this case, if I am charging $4 per unit, I could withstand 13% discount rate. That's a pretty steep one. And this project is still a go. And you can even work on, what if we have a growth rate of the revenues over time? Let me go back here to $3.50. And we go return this to 15%, a real worst case scenario. But it grows, our revenues our sales grow by, let's say, 2% over a year. Still not good enough. What if they grow by 5% every year? Still not good enough. Okay, what if we grow by 8% every year? As you can see, this is insensitive to the growth rate. That's a useful thing to know. Even at a robust growth rate of 8% per year, if the discount rate is too high, this project stays a dog. It's not good enough. And again, I'm showing you this not for this class, but for future use. If you're looking at term papers you have to produce, or if you end up in the corporate world in looking at projects, this is the kind of stuff we do. And this is why I bitch so much at you all this semester about knowing your Excel. This is the stuff that corporations do. And this is lightweight compared to some of the insane stuff they do. I want you to get your attendance radar done right now. And once you have done your attendance radar, that's all I have for you today. I thank